Okay, this is Keith Bearden. It's December the 13th, 2015. I'm on the phone with Mr. David Holsinger, our International Outstanding Bandmaster for Phi Beta Mu. And David, it's good to visit with you today, and we want to include you in our Learn from the Master series that will be posted on the International Phi Beta Mu website. So let's get started with Scary, go ahead.
Yeah, I appreciate you doing this because I obviously not going to be such a stroke because I'm not making it up to Midwest next week, actually. So I appreciate you being able to do this on the phone.
Well, it's wonderful. We're glad to do it. Let's talk about how David Holsinger got started in band.
Well, back in the dark ages. No, not really. But I was thinking a while ago that actually when I started band, I was in a rural school system in Missouri, and actually band started in the fourth grade when I was in school. I mean, that was really, it's really unusual in this day and age, but I started playing piano. I took piano lessons when I was 5 years old, and so by the fourth grade, I was the little cornet player in the fourth grade band.
That's awesome. Same for me. I started on cornet in the fourth grade band with J.W. King.
Oh, hey, yeah, he's a great guy.
Yes. So when you started in band then, was that, you said it was a small school. Did most of the kids start in band?
I can't remember that most everybody was in band because, you know, when you only had classes of 13 to 15 kids, you know, most of the kids, it was just part of the thing to everybody take band. And so we all started.
Right. Well, after you started in band and you went through high school and everything, then where did you go to college and how did you become a band director?
Well, I went to college at it was called Central Methodist College at that time in Fayette, Missouri. It's Central Methodist University now. And one of the things that was interesting was that I'd been so involved in music all through high school and was kind of the big man on the little campus with high school music. And so I went to college to be a music teacher because everybody told me I would be a good music teacher. Then I got to college and realized that everybody in my class wanted to be music teachers a whole lot more than I did. And so but basically it's all I knew. So, you know, I continued on, but I think it was like my junior year when I finally met Václav Nebel, and that's when I realized, well, you know, I want to be a composer also. But as it turned out, I've become a music teacher anyway. Here I am, you know, being a music teacher. And so things turned out the way they were supposed to, I guess.
So what year did you first start teaching?
Oh, let's see. That would have been, 71 probably. Though I graduated in 67 from undergrad. Then I went and did my master's. And then I went into the Army. It was all those great days of the Southeast Asian conflict. So, of course, most everybody got drafted in those days. So I was in the Army. So when I came back about 71 or 72, I think I had my first teaching job then.
Right. So were you torn between teaching or still having the passion to compose, or did you mix it together? How did you
I just mixed it together. I mean, I had some neat people I knew, like Claude T. Smith, who was born in the adjacent town to me. And so he was older than I was, but I've always known him. And so there he was as a teacher and composer. So it just was the thing to do. I didn't think twice about it.
And teaching probably paid the bills in the early goings.
You might say that, yes.
It's like, okay. So so what was it like in the school system, like the band classes daily, or did you teach all levels, or what was that like?
I'm trying to think now. When I started, when I was teaching in high school, I had band every day. I do remember that. Band met every day of the week. And probably a 50-minute period. It's been so long ago, I don't really remember, but I do know that I had the band every day.
And that's important, very important.
Oh, I think so, yes, because, I mean, I see some of these guys today who only get to have these two-day-a-week rehearsals, and, you know, I really feel bad for them because once they get started, they're done, and they can't get, to me, it just can't get enough done, you know.
and just that daily grind. In fact, I find that on the college thing, because basically I only have two rehearsals a week with my wind ensemble, and that's terrible. You know, it'd be great to see them every day, because you have to catch up on that first day of the week, catch up on what you've left off the week before, and so it's not handy.
Well, in your high school teaching, did you have classes after school?
No, they were in school. They were in school time. I remember that. We didn't meet after school or before school at all.
And probably only had marching band in the fall and concert in the spring.
Yes, and in those days, marching band consisted of having a different show every Friday night, unlike the marathon show we have today.
Correct. So in your first job, what was your salary like, and then did you have to teach any other classes?
I didn't have to teach any other classes. I had band and I had music classes. I mean, I did everything. I did the choir, and I did elementary music, and I always got in trouble with the elementary teachers because I got the kids too excited to go back to the classes. And so they were always getting after me for, can't you make music more boring? And so... So, I mean, everything I did was all music, but it was everything. But how much I got paid for it, I don't even remember that at all. Maybe I've just, blanked it out. Who knows?
Right. Well, those other classes that you taught other than band, you found that those were good recruiting strategies for you, I'm sure.
Well, in a small school, in fact, I started teaching in a small school, so... I guess you would say, I did the elementary, of course, but always had elementary band and stuff like that. So, of course, I'm always recruiting in the elementary school. But again, it was one of those schools where almost everybody in the grade school, when they started band, everybody started band,
Right.
And then you'd have to drop out, And so, basically, I could keep because my wife taught there before I taught this school. And, we could keep about 75% of the kids in each class in band. So it turned out to be pretty good, just a small country school. In fact, I think as I moved up to bigger schools, I actually enjoyed it less because they had so many other things the kids were pulled off to that you really had a problem, In fact, the closer we got teaching towards Kansas City and the metropolitan area, I think the less kids we actually had involved in band because they would be pulled off to other things because they were so close to a municipality.
Right. So looking back over your career and just observing what changes you've seen through the years and the positive or negative aspects of those changes.
Well, I think... And I hate to say it because they're not negative. I mean, I guess they're negative to me because I was raised in a different era. And today I find that marching band seems to be the tail that wags the dog in a lot of schools. And I hate that because there's so much music, concert music and like that, that the kids need to get involved in and learn from it. And they just don't get the time. It seems like everything is marching. In fact, I went and did an all-state band. I will not name the state. And it was in the springtime, and there were still schools doing parade marching. They still hadn't sat down for concert band yet. It was the middle of February. Mm-hmm. So I just, I just think that's kind of, I love drum corps. Other than, of course, the drum corps has done me a world of good because they played my music and so do marching bands. But... it seems to be kind of overbalanced, but it's just the way of the school world nowadays with PR and everything, I think.
Mm-hmm. And on the positive side of things, when the concert bands that you hear and adjudicate and work with, what do you see as positive in the development of the youngsters?
Well, I'll tell you, kids today play a whole lot more than I did when I was a kid. They seem to know more. I guess they're smarter, but it just seems that they're more dedicated. The people who are in band, these young kids, they are so much more dedicated to excelling in band than I was as a kid. I mean, I loved it, but it was just a different world when we were young. And, of course, every once in a while somebody asks me about, well, what kind of changes do you see in music education and all that? And I have to be perfectly honest and say, well, you know, when I go out and do honor bands and all-state bands, I only see the best kids, so I don't really know what it's like down in the trenches anymore in the high school and the junior high. And I really appreciate the kids who do that, because, I mean, I'm sending out teachers all the time, and we're talking about things we need to do and what you'll run into and how to take care of those things. And, I'm always trying to make them into better teachers. But at the same time, I really only see the cream of the crop when I go out.
Right. Well, and too, along those lines, I think we can attribute the improvement in individuals with the better teachers coming out of colleges and the more ranges of experience they have through the Internet. And
I think so. And the fact of private lessons, my gosh, in these big, in the big schools, and they have all these private lessons. I mean, I don't know about you, but when I was a kid, I had a private piano lesson, but I didn't have a private lesson on my trumpet or my cornet. I mean, it just, that wasn't part of the school plan.
Right, it was the high school band director that taught you.
That's right, yeah. Everything, that's all you had. They did the best they could.
So looking down into the crystal globe there in the future, the current trends, what do you see as maybe any problems down the road with the current trends, or what do you see happening in the future with what we're doing with marching band and everything?
Well, I don't know. That seems to be growing. But what I do know is that I'm really encouraged the kids that come out of my university band to not believe that everything that's on the front burner is the best thing in the whole wide world. I mean, I know I'm a composer and I write new music. I like to get that played. But I don't really want my kids to forget Claude T. Smith or Peter Menin or Howard Hanson or Persichetti or, you know, all these wonderful people that really inspired me as youngsters. I mean, we play all those people every year, and we play Nellie Bell, and we play, we just don't let I guess we could call them the old masters, but, I mean, it's hard to think that the old masters were only about 50 years ago, but, I mean,
right.
Those kind of people, they're important. The music they wrote was important, and I don't want my university kids to forget that. I keep telling them, I said, you need to play a Sousa March. If I catch you playing Highlights of Lady Gaga in your high school band, I will probably come there and kill you, on stage, I said, play Sousa, play Carl King, play, Fillmore, play the things that make bands what bands are supposed to be.
That is such incredibly great advice, and I feel certainly the same way. Personal highlights in your career, there have been so many.
Yeah, we'd be here for 6 hours, I think, if I could think of all of them. I don't know. But I think I asked my wife last night, because I knew that you were going to ask a question somewhat like that. I said, well, what do you think it would be if I had the biggest highlight? And really, we have to go all the way back to my college days when I met Václav Nelipel, because I was so inspired by him. And because of spending a week with our college band, I mean, I went home the very next week on spring break, getting off a tour with him, and wrote my very first piece, Prelude and Rondo. And I remember running up to Chillicothe, Missouri, and playing the piece, or showing the piece. I couldn't play in those days. I was showing the piece to Claude Smith, who was teaching at the time, and a bunch of other guys that I really admired. I was just so excited about I had actually written this piece of music. And then a few years later, it was published, and kind of that just started everything. But I guess, the highlight of my life is probably just meeting Nellie Bell so long ago and just being so inspired by him.
That's a great highlight right there. My goodness, to be able to meet him and sit down and visit with him, and having Claude Smith up the road.
Yeah, he still crops into my music. I'm working on a piece right now, and I told somebody, I said, I know the piece I'm writing for you is, it kind of sounds like Claude T. Smith, Peter Menin, and Václav Nelibel in a whole singer tortilla. Of course, I'm just coming off the stroke, so I'm kind of, I'm trying to get my brain back working again also. So it's kind of been interesting kind of getting my cognitive skills back, because I did lose a little bit this summer when I had these strokes.
Well, you
but,
sound
you know,
certainly back to normal to me.
Well, yeah, recovery is coming along, and my therapist say I'm ahead of schedule, so I'm counting on them to keep me there. They kind of save my life a little bit every day when I go to therapy.
Well, in your career, is there anything that you might have done differently? If you had a choice to go back, would you do anything differently, or would you just maintain the same?
I don't know. I guess wouldn't we all like to make more money, you know? But, you know, somehow it just – I'm telling my kids, well, you could have been university kids, so I used to be a doctor, a lawyer, an Indian chief, but I chose to be a musician because that was the passion of my life. And since you're sitting here, it's obviously yours too. So no matter, you know, you just can't measure everything in the narrow, so to speak.
That's true. That's true. Well, that's good advice, again, for your students. I know they appreciate you and worship everything you say, and it's very, very valuable. Do you have a favorite composition?
Of mine or somebody else?
Yours and someone else. What was your favorite one that you did?
Okay, well, mine. I don't know. It kind of changes every year, you know?
Right.
I guess when you keep writing, I guess you kind of have a favorite piece every year. But I don't know, To Tame the Perilous Skies might be that, or my Easter Symphony. It's hard to say. I mean, there are several pieces I've written that I'm glad I wrote. And there's some pieces that other people wrote that I wish I had written, you know. But I think my favorite piece by somebody else that keeps cropping back into my literature over and over again is Howard Hanson's Crying Hallelujah. And I think it's because on that piece, I remember the first time I played it under the band director I had in college, and it was so emotional. I can remember finishing the performance and tears rolling down my cheek. And so ever since then, it's just kind of like that's the piece that just speaks to me, and but probably always will.
I think that was a big piece during the time we were growing up in high school and college. And
that's certainly
one of my favorites also.
And,
absolutely.
And in fact, I always had to explain to everybody that, you know, no, you don't write for six trumpets. You know, he had a strange idea. He couldn't figure it out. Well, he had to have, you know, three and three and three and three. And I said, but, you know, it works. It's such a great piece. It's so emotional.
And To Tame the Perilous Skies, didn't you write that for the Air Force Band?
I did write that for the Air Force Band, for Langley, in fact.
Yeah so that was phenomenal piece.
I did it for Lowell Mason when he was there, Lowell Graham.
Yeah, another one of your colleagues here is outstanding bandmaster of Phi Beta Mu.
I saw that a while ago. I looked to see who this year's recipients were.
So you've mentioned some of the old masters that influenced you. Are there others other than Nellie Bell and Claude Smith? Who are some of the others that...
I don't really know. You know, there's a really funny thing. I'm just, you know, I'm such a band guy. I mean, all the band people. I mean, you know, somebody lists, you know, I remember several years ago when, Mark Camphouse, when we were talking about him being a recipient of one of the awards this year, in his book, he asked all these band composers to name all their favorite composers, and all of them were just stuck on all the classical masters, you know, orchestra music. But, you know, my deal was I really was so influenced by band. Of course, I think it's because I was raised in the country that, you know, that's really where I ran into my first ensemble. So people like, you know, like I say, like Peter Menon and Persichetti and Howard Hanson and people I would play along the way for high school and, you know, like Claude T and in college and all. And in fact, you know, it's really funny because a couple of years ago, I found this piece in the library here at Lee called Miniature Set by Donald White. And I remember playing that in college and thinking that was the most horrid piece I had ever played. It was so boring. And I got it out, you know, 50 years later and played it and went, well, this is a delightful little number. I wish I'd written this, you know. So, you know, things change as you go along. You never know.
Well, in your early days of teaching, you know, we're influenced with those that we've grown up with playing their music and everything. So that makes sense. Now, in your early years, because we hope to have some youngsters listening to these recordings, what helped you the most in those very first few years of teaching and then throughout your career? What helped you the most in developing your musicianship as a band director and
stuff. I had two outstanding band directors, Ken and Nancy Seward. In fact, Nancy Seward was the composer, Nancy Seward. They were a band director team out of Ruskin High School, and then they ended up at Central Methodist where I went to school. And I think between the two of them, those were probably the most passionate two people I've ever met in my entire life when it comes to music. I mean, it's just, you know, it's like I always joke about that Ken was so passionate that we played the Liebestod in our rehearsal, and he'd get done and he'd be weeping, and we're going, wait a minute, that was just a rehearsal, you know. He just was so into music, and I think that passion that he kind of filled us all with kind of carried me through a lot of things, because it's hard to say. I mean, I think, you know, if we had to name it, you know, because yes, every kid has to play their scales and learn all their fingerings and all that kind of stuff, but if you don't have the passion, then you'll never find the music, as far as I'm concerned. So that kind of his influence, and he and Nancy's influence, probably carried me in my early days. And then I had some great people out of Kansas City that I made friends with, that from some of the music stores, that were marvelous musicians, and they come out and do clinics at my school and help me with my clarinet sound, which always was really bad, and things like that. And so, and then, you know, I played music by Frank Erickson. Frank, of course, Frank lived right near where I grew up, and I remember, I remember talking to him, and he was so gracious. He would talk for hours. You know, and he was the greatest scorer of young band music. I mean, it's just some of those things: the Arifer Band, the Aria Cantabile, and Balladairs. They are so gorgeous, you know, and there's so much passion in them. And so, you know, I'm always encouraging my kids to, you know, look at these guys that happened those days, because they affected me. And, you know, Seward probably infected me with Vandercook's book on expression in music. And three of the attributes of expression that he used all the time, they were just kind of preached at the school I went to. And I'm not sure why, because I don't know if we had a band director who went to Vandercook way, way early, but it was just a tradition at our little school that we kind of followed what Vandercook said in his book. And we talked about the weight of notes, and we talked about the direction of music, and we talked about all the contour of the line. We just talked about all these expression things all the time. You know, you got the notes, but it was just more than notes.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, I'm always talking about, well, you know, you got to get the red part out of the music. Black and white's okay, but if you don't play the red part, then you haven't been anywhere. And I'm always encouraging my kids that, you know, whatever you do, whatever you conduct, whatever you play, when you get done, you ought to feel like you've been somewhere, you know, and it's, you know, it affected you so, so strongly.
Dave, is there those are really great things to share with new directors. Is there anything else that you would want to tell new directors just beginning their career, other than exposing themselves to other musicians and the music store conversations?
The nice thing, you know, you mentioned all the internet. So, like, we have so many, you know, many things like the Midwest and the internet, and there's clinics all over the place that you can go to, and the conducting seminars, and just to take advantage of all these things. You know, don't sit in your little home, you know, down the boonies or wherever you are, and go, woe is me, I only have a little band, what can I do? Because, I mean, you can make music with anything as long as you put your mind to it.
Absolutely. So, great suggestion.
Kind of where I come from.
Well, is there anything else you'd like to talk about? We might like to hear about your hobby with the model train.
I know one time you said something, you wanted to do this interview on the phone, but there has to be a train whistle in the background. But unfortunately, I don't live next to a train track, so we're kind of out of luck there.
Okay.
You know, it's a funny thing getting involved in model trains. I don't know. I think I've always been. I was raised in a town where there were 100 trains a day that came through. So I think my fascination with trains has been a lifetime thing. Right now, I'm unfortunately, because of my stroke, I can't manipulate some of my fingers well enough to get down and play with my trains right now. So they're kind of sitting under a plastic blanket downstairs, being protected from the dust until I can get my facilities back here again and get back down and start doing things. So, you know, I have about a year. I had the strokes in July, and they say it'll take me about a year to recover most of everything. So, you know, I'm hanging in there and working hard.
Well, it sounds like you're doing really well, and you've already conducted a concert. Isn't that correct?
I did five numbers on our last concert. Luckily, I have a wonderful wife who's a conductor and some great graduate students who kind of carry the load for me this last semester, and a whole bunch of kids in my wind ensemble who have really been on this journey with me and have done just super. They've really answered the call. And so, you know, it's amazing what you can do with only your right hand and your eyebrows, which is about all I've got to conduct with right now. But it
seems to adjust.
Yeah. Hopefully by the second semester I'll get my left arm back and we can start doing some things again.
Well, we look forward to seeing you back out there on the road soon. And it's been an honor and a privilege to interview you today for this project. And it will appear up on the Phi Beta Mu International website as soon as I can get it sent off. And it'll be exciting for the youngsters to hear and for the old guys to hear too, and all your friends.
Well, I just appreciate the honor you all paid me by naming me a band master of the year. I was so stunned when you look at the creme de la creme of directors that's on that list. I know in 2011 I kind of went, what am I doing on there? You know, so it was a great honor.
Shows that you work hard and keep your nose to the grindstone. All of a sudden you wake up and you're one of those.
I guess so.
But we were very honored and happy that you're there. You're a consummate friend and a musician, and you've done so much for the band world, and we appreciate it. So I'll end this conversation and appreciate anything that you write in the future. Looking forward to it. And
all right, very good.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, and I
all
will
right.
turn this machine off. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye.